show.
Urban agriculture and youth education in Oakland has a lot happening.
And that was Occupy Orlando, if I'm reading the monitor right here. You're tuned to the stream of Free Radio Santa Cruz and the live broadcast. We're at 101.1 and freakradio.org. This is Bathrop Spears Broadsides twice a week. I'm Robert Norris, and I'm going to be doing a lot of tape from Occupy Santa Cruz, where I was just visiting and handing out a flyer, which I hope to have posted on the internet by tonight on indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, which is where I often post stuff at Santa Cruz Indie Media for those who are interested. So, welcome to the show. I'm kind of beginning without the usual musical intro, which, I try to get more musical perhaps later in the show. Or perhaps not. It always feels like I never have enough time on this show. I'm going to begin with some recent interviews last few days at Occupy Santa Cruz, or about Occupy Santa Cruz, or about homeless civil rights issues, which are sort of what really interests me and what this show is primarily about. If you want to call into the show, there is a call-in number, 427-3772. 427-FRSC. If you want to reach me off air because you have something that's more sensitive, or you don't feel like it's appropriate for public broadcast, or you just for one reason or another want to chat without talking to the whole world, but don't feel nervous about talking to the community out there. You probably have more people interested in what you're saying than you might imagine. If it's a subject that doesn't get discussed much, if it's something that is of concern and relevant to the ongoing discussion around homeless civil rights, because a lot of people who are interested in that issue, or at least some of them, do tune into this show. So 427-3772 is the phone number here. 423-4833 is the off-air number if you want to call in. That's also the number for HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, the civil rights group that meets every Wednesday that I work with. Without further ado, let's turn to some interviews. I think these are from, we're starting with October 30th, about 5 days ago.
So it is now October 30th, 2011, a Sunday. Pleasant, but not hot. The honks you hear are people honking in support of Occupy Santa Cruz, whose sign next to the blue porta potty, right next to the bus stop at the Water Street Bridge, is Bulldoze Wall Street. The General Assembly is about to begin. It's near 2 o'clock. And there's a small group of people here today. Regulars, Chris Doyen, who's going to be streaming the assembly. Patrick, who on one occasion was accused recently of disrupting the assembly, and some familiar faces, Tank and Noah and Danica, people here ready to boogie. We're here talking with
Danica DeFoy.
Danica, you were here last night at the General Assembly.
Yeah, I was, and I thought it was very interesting because it seemed like for a second that the camp was getting a little bit divided, but then people came together for a really nice General Assembly headed by Chris, and he had a lot of really great things to say, and he updated everybody about Oakland and the general strike that everyone's to participate in on November the 2nd.
I see you're reading Starhawk, Dreaming in the Dark.
Yeah, I am. I actually went to the protest facilitator meeting that she did here, I think it was on Wednesday, and it was really interesting to see her, and she gave some really great tips. And I think as well, it's just fun for people to have activities here, because, one thing that we do have to fight is boredom and the weather and just mundane things like that. But she is just an inspiring person, and I thank her very much for coming down to share her time with us.
How long are you camped out here now?
I'm not camped out here, no. I've been actually going back and forth from Prunedale to my sister's house, And
Prunedale, the site of the former Occupy Prunedale?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Not really that big, but I know that Occupy Monterey is getting its first encampment started in front of Colton Hall. So that's a positive.
What is Colton Hall and where is it?
Colton Hall is the main city hall. It's actually one of the first, I believe, state buildings in, you know, California, obviously. But given Monterey's historic significance, I think that Occupy Monterey is very, even though it's small right now, I think it is significant. And it's cool that we have one in different communities up and down the coast.
Thank you, Danica. Anything else you wish to add before I move along?
Not really. Just thank you, everybody, for listening to Robert, because I think he is an important part of the media, as well as everybody who can, you know, listen to any kind of political radio or what have you.
You yourself are doing a regular report on Occupy, or you're covering other subjects?
Yeah, I am. I'm actually focusing on Occupy right now, and I did report on my parents' show on KRXA about Occupy Santa Cruz and Occupy Oakland as well. So I try to keep people updated, because a lot of people just like to listen to what's going on, but we do have some people that got shamed into action, I think.
Or inspired, perhaps.
Inspired, but yeah, I think more shamed, but hopefully inspired into action. But there is one guy who is Arlen Grossman, who is doing a lot of work for Occupy Monterey, so I want to give him a shout-out, as well as everybody that's driving by and giving support to us, because some people, that's all they can do right now.
And we've been talking with
Danica DeFoy.
Thanks, Danica. There's a man with a sandwich board. What's your name, sir?
My name? Bill.
And Bill, you have a sign, we are the 99%. Sorry, we have a T-shirt, we are the 99%. And you have a signboard, the first I've seen, by the way, around town, which is a variety of stickers on it. Stop the wars, healthcare for people, not for profit, and Occupy Santa Cruz. Get political and use bumper stickers. Corporations give us the best government money can buy. I love Robert Norris. No, that's not a sign. That's just me making things up. And so what's been the impact? Have you been around town with a sign, or are you just coming to the...
No, I'll go up and down Pacific Avenue.
What kind of reactions do you get?
I got and the bumper stickers are free. I mean, looking for a donation, but I'm handing these out.
This is Occupy Santa Cruz, sort of a 3x5 card.
Yeah. And
help carry the message, join us at the corner.
Folks are taking it and smiling and saying right on, and, you know, a lot of people are ignoring it, and it's a whole bistro cafe.
You denounce you for having...
Oh, yeah, you get catcalls.
And that happened today, or...?
No, not today.
I can denounce you if you feel a little left out.
No, it's okay. It's at least they're thinking about it. You know, they say get a job or something like that. It's like, okay.
And how long have you been doing the signboarding?
About a week now.
And did you make the signboard yourself, or was it rented?
And by signboard, I mean sandwich board. That means a board, of course, that you kind of put up on your own person. It's got flat sides that cover both your front and back with the message that you want to put out.
No, sure did. Made it myself.
First time you've done this?
Yeah, since maybe 1971.
Yeah, so you were an old-time protester supporting Richard Nixon in his valiant crusade.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
His secret plan to get us out of Vietnam.
Right.
That was quite a secret. I never figured out what it was.
Yeah.
It was more of a plan to keep us in Vietnam. But, you know, what can you say? Old Dick, he was tricky.
Yeah, he was.
He was not a crook.
Those were wild times.
Indeed.
But, you know, I'm like baby boomer, and now I'm retired last month, so I'm back to what I was doing.
Elder boom boom.
Yeah, I'm back to what I was doing before I got into the job world, which was basically living on a farm and baking bread and protesting the war. What I was doing 30 years, 40 years ago.
Indeed.
You know, there's only a few people who are able to do this shit, and the baby boomers who are retiring are one group that's got the money and the time to work on this. The other people are the unemployed and the homeless, and other than that, you know, we got to get people out here who can help support this. And one way to get the message out, nobody's got bumper stickers on their car. Nobody.
I do.
Yeah, I mean, very few. Let's put it that way. I mean, there's so many blank bumpers. The last couple months I was going to work, I got ticked off back.
You don't want to mess up your car with a bumper sticker.
They peel off. They're vinyl. But the last couple months I was going to work, I got pissed off at this back in...
Talk with me.
March.
I want to take off my...
Back in March and April, when Wisconsin was catching fire, I got really pissed off. So I had some bumper stickers made up, and I put them on my truck, and... driving back and forth to work from Prunedale to Palo Alto. Nobody on 101 had bumper stickers.
So you're a Prunedale man, too. You and Janika both.
Hey, I love it. Is this yours?
This is mine. I have a few bumper stickers. See, I've got a few bumper stickers.
Love it.
Indeed. Check it out. So I'm down here at the General Assembly, and it's being held on the steps of the courthouse, but facing San Lorenzo Park rather than facing Water Street, facing the campground, which has about 70 tents. And then I count about 70 people here. Police officer just drove by. There's a report from Sacramento. Met there being charged with loitering, but they have counsel. And there's another report that the city of Irvine totally supports the campers that they can camp, but not Santa Cruz yet. Eugene has supposedly waived its camping ban for the occupiers as well, according to another report.
About a problem or a situation that a lot of the occupations are, in a lot of ways, struggling with. And it also does end with, a positive solution. So it's called What Do We Do? What Do We Do? Concerning the number of homeless in our occupied camps, what do we do? What do we do? Do we push them out because they get in the way of a neatly framed image, making our lives too complicated, making us think, an image shaped by the same design that makes us buy what we do not need and helps us think we can ignore what fills every door cubby down the street? Wear ties and cut the hair, they say. It plays so much better in the press. But it is the homeless are for whom we fight. For they were the first to feel the knife of indifference and greed. First, Wall Street came for the mentally ill and threw them out. Then the random poor. Then the middle-class family who lost their jobs and then their home. We can ignore them no more because we will be next. We will be next. The homeless among us speak to our truth like few other, that we do indeed care. We do indeed care for all of us, the 99%. Bring more food.
Hey. Now I'm reading a poem from San Diego. Tank from the Camp Alliance speaks. Nothing to report. Pretty quiet. Homeless outreach still in the works. Mike D from Tactics reports 4:30 they meet. Planning a day of action in Capitol and possibly Santa Cruz. Occupy a tourist agency. Wear loud, ugly Hawaiian shirts.
We're not going to go in vain. We're just going to point and make a scene.
Point and make a scene.
You don't have to know a script or anything. Oh, it's not a march?
It's not like a street theater.
Street theater.
We just need bodies.
Need bodies to stand together.
A muddled mass of tourists. And we'll have people reading scripts and passing out handbills.
People reading scripts and passing out handbills. Held in conjunction with the Switch Your Money to a Local Credit Union Day.
If you're interested, come to the meeting at 4:30 today.
4:30 today is the meeting. 4:30 Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, too. Process group 2 hours twice a day. Mike is also reporting on this.
One of the fruits of that was this, that we wanted to make sure that everyone was aware of how much time is left.
And they're going to be making, holding up a whiteboard with the time left to speak. Ed Fry on mission statement.
Copies of it are over at the table.
Mission statement adopted on Thursday. Copies of the table available. Media, nobody here. Outreach. Getting in contact with unions to get on board with the strike on the 2nd of November.
If there are people here, we try and meet every time after the GA.
There's a general strike plan for Wednesday. The pledge rises for legal. Still looking for attorneys. $2,500 anonymous donation.
So these are notes and kind of brief summaries of what happened at the General Assembly on Sunday. But, of course, the reality is that things happened so quickly and so many more things have happened since then. And also, this is sort of it may not be of great interest to folks who are not part of this process or who are perhaps part of the process and have gone beyond it, that I'm kind of reluctant to continue playing this bit. In fact, I think I'm going to skip beyond it. And what I'll do is, while I'm kind of catching up with that part of the tape, I'm going to play some other interviews. I did promise in a story I wrote on Indy Bay about the police coming onto the Occupy Santa Cruz grounds and instructing, reportedly instructing people. They didn't do this directly to me or to anyone that was in hearing distance in a public way. But according to Dennis and then secondhand from Steve Plaich, there was a threat made by Deputy Chief Clark that the camp would be removed in 3 to 4 days. People had 3 or 4 days to leave. I did an interview with Dreamcatcher, which I hope to be able to play. One of the problems I have is that the tape that I was doing recording on broke on the way about 10 minutes ago, so I'm playing some older interviews. I promised on the story I wrote about the police threat to occupy, to remove the Occupy Santa Cruz protest, that I would be playing some interviews about the incident that was the supposed trigger for the police, or some would say pretext, or and a matter of some concern to campers too, involving the arrest of 3 people, 2 people for public intoxication, 1 person for allegedly assaulting a park worker or a county worker, who some say was doing a leaf-blowing activity at 4:30 in the morning, some say at 8:30 in the morning. I'm not sure exactly when it was. Obviously, I wasn't there, and I didn't get enough eyewitness consistency to be able to comfortably say what actually went down. But I did do some interviews. However, in order to locate those interviews, this may take me a moment or two, or maybe a week or two, who knows. I'm going to play some other interviews while we're waiting. I've also gotten a lot of, I've kind of distilled or strained or concentrated some stuff from the last city council meeting, for those of you who follow the Santa Cruz City Council. And there was a large crowd of people from Occupy Santa Cruz there who came down at the call of Chris Doyen, Commander X, at the 5 o'clock brief oral communications period, which Mayor Coonerty still allows, in spite of the fact that he's contracted it, ghettoized it, isolated it. I played that entire period, I think, on Sunday when I did my earlier show. But there was some discussion before then that I did and that came up around an issue that's actually happening tonight at 7 o'clock. For those of you who are interested in pursuing it, if you're interested, the Santa Cruz City Council chambers are going to be the site of a joint transportation, I think it's Public Works, and then some other regional transportation commission, I'm not sure, who are going to be fast-tracking the merchant plan to totally reshape the downtown area into a two-way street in order to beef up the Christmas sales. And I found this kind of ludicrous, particularly given the lack of real persuasive evidence. They have a study that recommended a number of things called the Gibbs study, but they're taking this one item out and trying to rush it forward in the hope that they can make a lot of money at Christmas time by changing the face of the downtown again. I mean, part of it is a perfectly rational notion that if it's a normal downtown business district, they might be able to get some more shoppers in there who won't be confused by the one-way streets. I understand that well enough. But the reality of speeding up the traffic and creating more traffic by the two-way street in order to benefit the merchant community seems a pretty selfish and narrow-minded approach. I didn't like the way the entire downtown was reconfigured after the earthquake, done to some extent because under pressure from the Santa Cruz Police Department, as I understand it, in order to remove all the shrubbery and kind of make the avenue a very straight area, remove all the benches. There were brick planters that were used as benches earlier in the 1980s and the 70s when the mall was first designed and had its heyday. Anyway, that's happening tonight at 7 o'clock at the City Council Chambers. If you're interested in checking that out, I hope to have some tape from it at some point, although I don't think I'm going to that one. I had kind of sat through enough of that at the City Council meeting a week ago, which we'll be hearing some tape from on Sunday when I come back. Anyway, let's hear some interviews, and maybe we'll hear from you, 427-3772. Let us know what's cooking down at, wherever you're at, and maybe down to Occupy Santa Cruz.
I just really think that we do...
We're talking with...
Casey?
Sorry, Casey.
I really... the...
I seem to have a lead that isn't going anywhere. This can be a problem. I'll have to find out what's cooking here. Supposedly, it looks like it's connected, so let's see what our deal is here. I'll try again.
What's going on a lot of the time? And your thought is?
I just really think that we do...
We're talking with...
Casey?
Sorry, Casey.
I really think we do need, the Wi-Fi hotspot because, if it's only $50 a month, we have money from Treasury that could go into that because I think a lot of people are just unaware of what's actually happening on a national and global level. And if you get more people knowing what's happening on the national and global level, then you have more people who understand what the core purposes are of being here. And, they know that some people might have their individual, opinions that they're really projecting on to their participation in Occupy, but the general message of what everybody is for can be really understood if people have access to the internet.
Casey, how long have you been here?
We've been here for about a week, actually. We were just on a road trip, and somebody told us about it. We had breakfast with somebody, and they just told us about it. So we came down here and checked it out, and we've been here ever since.
Where from?
We are originally from the south side of Chicago.
And you came from what location when you heard about it?
Actually, we were in town at the time, yeah.
Because, as you know, Occupies are happening in different areas now. Occupy Oakland, Occupy San Francisco, and so forth.
Yeah.
Occupy San Jose was busted and kind of came back. I'm not sure how far back they are yet.
Yeah, we haven't actually been to any of those. We haven't really... we've been on the road for 2 months, so our, personal connection to, internet access and the news and everything like that, we haven't really been paying attention. And so when we came here, we just started finding out what's actually going on because we've been, on the road, on a road trip ever since the Wall Street Occupy. So
now, what have you seen in the last week that's either dismayed you or impressed you, and what's been happening in your view?
The whole movement on the national and worldwide level really gets people emotional because they realize that it's something that's happening to everybody. Everybody's suffering with this problem. So I think when you look at it at a national level, it's a little bit more motivating.
Compelling.
Yeah, compelling. Yeah, it makes you want to be part of the movement a lot more. And if you don't know about that kind of stuff, like you only know about the local issues, then you're like...
So it's automated, but there's a remote code. You're kind of biased. Don't lose touch with the local issues, because I think that what I'd like to see the camp do is go after the local 1% here, because that would give it some real local focus.
Yeah.
And it might even draw people in who are here who think, this is a nice ideology, but it's pretty vague and nobody really knows what they're doing, and those are the complaints. Whereas if you focus on the 1%, the developers, the Barry Swensons, the Canfields, who are running the boardwalk, people who are actually in power power in the City Council, Board of Supervisors, Police Department, then you get into a situation where there's both a national and a local focus.
Yeah. You know, that's the thing. I think a lot of people who are local and have the ability to help out and are behind the purpose and need to show up. Because the thing is if there's people who are on the fence who are like, yeah, I really wish the Occupy in Santa Cruz was doing better, I support that and I hope it stays there, they need to come down. They need to voice their opinion and actually stay in the camp so that, you know, you can see what we're dealing with. There's a lot of issues that are talked about in the GA that are about the camp. And it's because a lot of people who are showing up, you know, after work and coming here to the General Assembly, they don't know the issues that happen during the day. There's a whole side of this entire thing that some people just never see. So actually coming down and spending a few days to camp just to see how it works around the camp and how the, you know, stairs is coordinated with us. Like, it would, I think it would work to get people, you know, more interested when they know, like, how much help we really do need. There's a lot of people who get emotionally and, you know, mentally exhausted, and it's hard to make decisions when we don't have enough help because the same people are always trying to take care of the problems and they're exhausted.
Has it been growing in the last week, shrinking, staying the same?
As far as the number of campers, it's grown.
Number of participants in Occupy Santa Cruz?
There
seemed to be a large General Assembly last night, 70, 80 people.
Yeah, and yeah, a lot of people.
A lot of session with this fantasy about the police raid or the concern about a few people who are working out a method for dealing with disruptions in the campground.
Yeah.
And again, this conversation took place last Sunday, I believe. That was on the, is it 27th? No, it was would have been the 30th of October.
I think we just really we really need more people to come into the camp because I think the people who are there for the General Assembly, you know, they kind of hear that a lot of the things that we discuss are about the relations with camp. So if they only come for one of those and they're like, oh, you know, the camp isn't, you know, good.
Push to move the General Assembly down here again.
Exactly.
For sure.
And someone, and we did propose that yesterday, and there was a lot of diverse opinions. There was a lot of
I heard that even one day a week they wouldn't, you know, somebody blocked it because you can't be seen.
No, it couldn't have been on Sunday because they actually did move the General Assembly for the first time over to the other side of the courthouse so that it was facing the camp and people from the camp could see what was happening, and some of them found it more convenient and more inspiring to come up and be a part of that General Assembly. So it looks like this was, I guess it could have been the original about 2 weeks ago.
From the road. Well, this camp is seen, I mean, the camp is seen from the road, but the, you know, the protest is seen from the road 24 hours a day. So I think for 1 hour, it could cover 2 or 3 hours, it could come down here.
Oh, I am definitely all for the thought of having the General Assembly down here once, you know, a week. Because the thing is yeah, it would put people in the environment. They would understand, you know, what the campers are dealing with, how there's people walking back and forth constantly. And people who want to cause a commotion. Like, a lot of people think that it's just the campers that are, you know, causing hostility and making things all dramatic. But there's a lot of just random people that walk by and just say things. And they're not even associated with us. And they give us a bad name.
But I think that, you know, again, it's not the name you get. It's you're going to get this kind of criticism, both from those who want to see this camp go and from those who don't understand yet what's going on. So I think, you know, patience and focus on organizing and expanding and following the kinds of suggestions I think you're Commander X here and that notable Robert Norris guy give are just, I mean, follow us in all things.
Yeah.
I'm kind of half kidding here, but not entirely. I wanted to ask you something, but I forgot what it was. Did you have something you wanted to say? Because you've done good.
Actually, one thing from the General Assembly yesterday that kind of bothered me, I really think we need people to come out to help with the process group of the actual process of the General Assembly, how we, you know, move things forward, the hand signals and the methods, the, you know, facilitators' abilities, like, I think we need people to come out and support the process group, because last night I had never raised my hand in a General Assembly to actually say anything and be put on stack. I raised it 5 times.
They had a lot of time problem doing that. I heard a number of complaints about that. On the other hand, this tape will not be played until Thursday night, so I suspect by Thursday night you'll have brought this up at the next General Assembly and the one after, and the one after, and maybe there have been some resolution will have been done along with the moving of the General Assembly down here, at least, I'd say more than once a week. I'd say at least a couple times a week. I mean, this is the heart of the protest, I think, this campground, in spite of what people say, it's just a homeless encampment. I don't, you know, that's, homelessness is the result of Wall Street and all kinds of other, you know, discriminatory and iniquitous practices that are happening. So, you know, it is the living embodiment or the dying embodiment of what needs to be addressed, and now people are joining together and addressing it and anticipating it. Again, we've been talking with
Casey.
Thanks, Casey. Anything more? You all set?
No, that's it.
Good. They're slow speed again, folks. The protesters are off with signs to picket the Bank of America. Mostly these are houseless protesters going off to do that. And most of the people in front of the county building right now, where I'm now standing, as it's about 10 o'clock, are also houseless. I'm going to walk over the bridge, keep an eye on that. Good morning. Yes, keep an eye on that protest that's happening down at the Bank of America. This has been going on for a number of days, around 9 or 10 in the morning, with apparently significant effect. The banks are closing their doors and so forth. The weather is at the moment cool, even misty, and the beat goes on. There goes Gary Johnson, the activist who actually has been convicted of 647E lodging in the last protest, off to pick up the Bank of America. Well, I'm hearing from Uncle Glenn here that the Homeless Service Center, while it's getting a bigger influx of homeless people for meals and is still serving 2 meals a day, is now charging $5 a month for mail. Is that right, Glenn?
Yeah, that's correct.
And you're also... You were wondering, you know, given the fact that there is a toleration policy toward campers in the San Lorenzo benchlands with Occupy Santa Cruz, as well as with sleepers and, to some extent, campers on the steps of the courthouse, how this will impact, say, the cases of people like Gary Johnson, Ed Fry, Linda LeMaster, Chris Doyen, some of whom have been convicted, some of whom are facing trial for 647E lodging. Morning.
Well, I'm particularly concerned about Gary Johnson's case because he's the only, you might say, thoroughly homeless person on the docket there, along with Ed Fry. And my concern is that I was wondering how he's taking the fact that he's been the scapegoat of the county on this. They want to make an object lesson of this person at the same time that they've been allowing Occupy Santa Cruz to do what they like, basically.
Right. I think that, you know, there's obviously, in numbers, there is strength is the lesson here.
Well, I'm wondering. I mean, I think they're certainly got to be nervous that Occupy is occurring all over the nation. So, you know, if little old Santa Cruz doesn't want to get on the map as being a fascist, eco-fascist city, well, then you can't lean on Occupy Santa Cruz.
And alternately, when they begin cracking down, as they have already in Chicago, North Carolina, Oakland, San Francisco, San Jose, Melbourne, if the crackdown becomes more severe, it'll happen here as well.
Well, now, the news I've been seeing is that they've been beating the oppression in New York and in Oakland to date. Now, I haven't heard of any others. I haven't heard about these
yeah.
cases that you're
yeah.
referring to.
Yeah, San Jose was dispersed on Thursday. Melbourne was attacked by horse police officers and closed down. Yeah, on Friday.
Where's Melbourne?
Australia.
Oh, Australia. Well,
yeah.
That's a little different. But no, I can believe.
It's all about Occupy Wall Street.
I can believe San Jose was fascist enough to break it up, but they'll pay for that.
And I believe Cincinnati had a positive outcome. A judge granted an injunction that allowed people to sleep at a protest, or at least to be at a park after closing hours. Hey, Ricardo.
And this is a couple of, about a week and a half old, I believe, this report. San Jose is back in smaller numbers. I actually had a report from them that I was going to give last show. It's And I believe there may be some talk of Santa Cruzans going over to support San Jose, which is, as some may know, the third largest city in the state. But with a relatively small protest there compared, let's say, to places like Oakland, San Francisco, and even Santa Cruz. Don't know what's happened in Melbourne. Oakland certainly came back. New York certainly came back. And there's this, of course, Occupy Together is a website to go to check out the Occupies all over the country. There are probably better websites to go to check out arrests and repressions. I think Occupy Arrest is one place to go to if you're trying to get that on the Internet. Again, we're listening to something that looks like, I think it's around October 24th, thereabouts, interviews around Occupy Santa Cruz.
So there was a positive, but there have been other instances of camps being broken up. I'm actually looking to find a website where they're tallying this. As you know, Occupy Together is a website, maybe you don't know, but that's for those who don't know. Occupy Together is a website that does list all the upcoming meetings of the now 2,300 occupies throughout the world.
2,300 worldwide, yeah.
But that doesn't...
Now it's 2,450 as of a week and a half later, which means it's actually growing more slowly than it was growing before, but it continues to grow the number of registered occupies throughout the world.
It doesn't mean that there are 2,300 camps. It means that there are 2,300 groups in different cities.
Right. Now, are these opposing the financial world in general or just the United States financial world?
That I don't know, but I'm assuming it's Wall Street, since it all takes off from Occupy Wall Street. So they may also be imposing, you know, the similar activities in other countries. But we know Wall Street is king.
Well, it's losing business. Hopefully it loses a lot more business.
Oh, what a cynical attitude for our valued and hallowed American institution.
We have stock broker offices in every state. I mean, we have Wall Street is just the New York Stock Exchange. I mean, you've got the California Stock Exchange right here in California somewhere.
And all good people should immediately go up buy stock, as you know, because... and there you are.
No, I'm not saying go buy stock. No, I think...
I know you're not.
I'm going to make a financial assessment. Stocks aren't going to go very far. People are going to be buying back their own stocks.
Now, Glenn, you've been a traveler for many years at least, and you're in Santa Cruz. Any sense of where this movement is going?
Well, I'm not sure exactly which movement. We've got a lot of different things going on right now. I mean, you've got an overall intolerance for homeless. You've got Occupy Santa Cruz gaining some momentum. You've got demographic changes. You've got a huge biker movement going up in the mountains, I just noticed yesterday.
And Felton, they showed up as a big rally.
I went right through that rally on bicycle. Even got buzzed a little bit.
Not these sort of aging, heavy middle-class men who come out once a year to do a thingy.
Well, I don't even think it's that like that. They might have. They were just meeting at the restaurants. That many bikers that live up in that area, and I mean they live in here, have their vacation homes, and this
and
is
we're
prime biking.
We're talking several hundred people, right?
But that's what I'm saying. That these people are local in this area.
Well, that's interesting, because, again, I've got to start interviewing some bikers for free radio, not to mention some gang members, and I don't want to imply that all bikers are gang members or that gang members are underprivileged bikers, certainly not. But anything we've been talking with?
Glenn Rabinal.
Thank you, Glenn, and until next time?
Yeah, I'll see you again.
All right. And it's about 10:10 as I walk by Water and... River Street, and the protesters in front of Bank of America, looks like there are about four or five of them with signs, which I find hard to read at a distance, but they're there. No more greed, says one of them, and Gary Johnson has arrived with his sign, which he had to walk all the way over to the sign-making area in front of the courthouse to get. It's an overcast morning, as I said, but folks are expressing their opinions. Hey, good morning. Good morning. So, the machine seems to be working. It is now about 10:10, and I've been running around doing interviews, feeding off the, real communication between people in terms of what sounds like good and useful information about how people feel about each other, what's really going on in the homeless interaction encampment. Chris.
And again, kind of my apologies for the somewhat sporadic notes. I'm kind of running around trying to do a number of things. And I usually play my raw material. Sometimes that can be less than ideal for folks, but hopefully it's not that bad. Let's see if this is a little more on topic. Could be. Let's see where we're at with this particular tape. This is from, this is more recent than the previous interviews you just heard.
To issue resolution of support.
And we're back on the previous General Assembly. There was actually an interview I had with a guy after the General Assembly about an incident that happened on Sunday morning on the bridge, the Water Street Bridge, which upset him and other people watching it. And that involved number of squad cars, number of police officers reportedly brutalizing an individual they were taking into custody. Of course, I wasn't there. I got the secondhand reports. And I believe I think we have this interview right here, right now.
Brandon Campbell.
And Brandon, we just finished the General Assembly meeting at 3:15, and you were wondering, what about this incident that happened, on the bridge or near the bridge?
A dude reached in his pocket for his wallet, and the police proceeded to beat him up.
How many police officers were involved?
Four.
And did you notice the names of any of them?
Clark, Winston, Winston's Mexican friend. I don't remember his Forrest. Forbes. They harass us constantly and give us tickets for no reason. They arrested me the other day.
What were you arrested for?
They arrested me for drunk in public. I had alcohol on my breath from the night before, and they said I was drunk in public, and I hadn't even had a beer yet.
Able to take care of yourself?
No, they just threw me in the cop car.
You were able to take care of yourself if they'd not arrested you?
Oh, yeah,
the definitely. The basis for drunk in public is if you're unable to take care of yourself.
Yes, I was. Right. And my friend is standing around here, too. He was with me.
Where was this?
This was right by Taco Bell in the crosswalk. They tried to get me for jaywalking first, and then Clark and Forbes, they just said no. I said I wasn't jaywalking, and they got me for drunk in public, and they gave me 9 months in jail, which I think is unfair justice.
Now, what day was this?
October 7th.
And what time of day?
It was about 9:25 in the morning.
Did you take a plea or did you take it to trial?
We did take it to trial, and they dropped most of the charges. They gave me 270 days.
What were the charges?
It was drunk in public, and they said I had probation violation, in which I don't, so we took that to trial.
And so you were found guilty of the probation violation?
No, they dropped those.
And drunk in public is normally an infraction. Was it a misdemeanor?
Yes, it is.
Interesting. And who was your public defender?
I don't quite remember his name, but he was good.
But not good enough?
Oh, no. He got me off on the probation violation because they wanted to hit me with 270, 270, and 270. They wanted to send me to prison. Last summer, I got 6 drunken publics. They used those against me, and I only had 2 this time, which I already took care of. And they hit me with this one. And they used those all against me and gave me 270 days. There's another 5 people in jail for the same thing, which got another 270. All 5 of them are in jail for the same thing. It's injustice.
Interesting. Now, getting back to this violent episode today, who was the victim?
I don't know who the victim was.
What cheer he looked like?
It was a white male with tattoos. He had no shirt on, and they just proceeded to beat him up and tase him and hit him with billy clubs, and they were kicking and punching him, and it was just uncalled for.
Where exactly? This was on the bridge, before the bridge?
It was totally out of line. It was right in the middle of the bridge.
And how much of the incident did you see? When did you come upon it?
I seen the whole thing go down.
And how did it begin?
They pulled up on one side of him. The other cop came up from behind him Then two more cop cars came up. They all just proceeded to beat him. They were the two cops, Winston and Forbes, were already beating him. The other two cops jumped in.
Now, if we were to slow down slow motion, you remember which cop approached him first?
It was Clark.
And what did any? Was there any verbal interaction?
I didn't hear the verbal interaction because I was sitting by the bus stop over here.
You were about half a bridge away?
Yeah, about a half a bridge away. There was multiple witnesses to that.
And this all happened about what time?
This was about 10:30, 10:45 this morning.
And how long did the incident take?
About 35 minutes.
So, did you know if you didn't hear anything that was said between the folks?
No, he reached in his wallet and they just proceeded to beat him up.
And there were squad cars. You say there were three squad cars parked on
the
bridge.
There were five all together after it was done. An ambulance, a fire department. Dude was screaming when they were tying him down. They were doing something to him, but there was a lot of people watching.
And again, we're interrupting this report on an assault, alleged assault by police on a guy on the bridge on Sunday morning. We have a caller. Hey there, caller. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. What's your name, caller?
My name is
Say again?
My name is
Okay, O, go ahead.
Me and my friend were looking at email.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and he said, what did you say? He said that everybody should stay at home and occupy their houses.
Uh-huh. Okie doke. Any other thoughts?
No.
I think I recognize this voice. Is this a man who also goes by the name of a bird on occasion?
No!
Crow, you can't fool me.
I tried.
So do I just sense a certain skepticism about Occupy Santa Cruz? Are you...
Well, you know, I got some fucking issues with that bullshit. But, you know, I mean, I like to stick more to the issues of the sleeping ban and everything. I just think there's way too many fucking issues with Occupy. I support it, but it's just that certain things about how they're structuring things that kind of bothered me pissing off. You know, like I was playing with a little child up on top of the stairs, whatever, having a fucking meeting, and they, you know, had to go shut me down because I was having too much fun with the kid, you know. And I was kind of like, I told everybody, don't take your fucking shit too seriously because you're not going to fucking really change anything. You know, I mean, it's great that, you know, things are happening the way they are. And maybe, you know, maybe we'll shut down the whole government and the fucking world and everything else. But what's the point? You know, we're still pretty fucked up as a human race anyway.
Well, you old cynic, you.
Yeah, I know. You know.
Well, it sounds like, you know, you got kind of the control side of some of the folks at Occupy Santa Cruz.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, I was just playing with a kid, you know, that his mother was fucking sitting there, you know, at the meeting, and we were away from them. And, you know, you could barely hear anybody talking because of the fucking traffic back and forth by the side of the courthouse. And, you know, and I was just trying to keep the kid busy, you know, and playing with him and stuff. And they shut me down because they couldn't hear, you know, and that was fucking bullshit. So I just drove away, and I told them to go fuck themselves and the fucking corporate banks, you know. And it was the last time I was over there.
And how long ago was that, Crow?
That was about, like, maybe 5-6 days ago.
Well, you might...
I'm occupying Santa Cruz since I've ever fucking known you, you know?
You've been fighting for civil rights for homeless people for 2 decades. It's true.
Yeah. And it's just like, you know... I mean, it's just they're getting... I mean, I told them don't be too serious about it. I mean, it's great and everything. You know, I'd like to see it, you know, go on and on and on. But in reality, you know, the federal government is not really going to let it go too far because they have to keep control of things. you know, and they can't have it out of control. And I'm glad it's, I'm glad to see everybody doing what they're doing, and I support it in my way. But, you know, as far as, you know, when I first seen the protest going on, I couldn't figure out what they were protesting about. You know, because I didn't see Stop the Sleepy Band signs once in any of those signs, you know.
There were a couple Stop Sleeping Band signs, but not many. It's true. There were a few.
That was late on, you know, because people like me and you have probably made a sign or something, like, you know, put it up and stuff. But obviously, you know, they're camping out over there at the fucking in the grassy knoll. And, you know, it's nice that they got away with it, but hey, we were getting fucking tickets last year for the same fucking thing, you know? And, now they're not, you know, so, you know, I'm glad they're not getting tickets, you know, but I'm still getting fucking tickets to sleeping in my fucking piece of shit RV, you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. I know also that you've been supportive of previous homeless occupations of City Hall and the courthouse, and
I gotta go to court because of a fucking ticket I got. Me and Rick got a ticket for fucking sleeping in the RV at 7:30 in the morning over by Whole Foods, the side street over there. And we got a court date coming up, I believe in November at the lower court, Department 10.
So you have, so again, when is this, when is your court date coming up?
I don't know the exact date. I can check on it and I'll let you know, all right?
Okay, well, Crow.
Yeah, Red wants to say hi.
Hi, Robert.
Hey, Red, how's it going? How's your health, big girl?
Well, I have to go 3 to 5 years taking pills to get rid of estrogen because they figured out the cancer came through estrogen.
The cancer's in remission?
I have to take these 6 weeks away, otherwise it will come back.
But oh, boy.
I wanted to say, too, the signs that they are holding out at Occupy Santa Cruz, none of them have a real reason why what they want. And people driving by are seeing Occupy Santa Cruz, but why don't you have a couple of signs saying this, this. Why?
Right. That's a criticism that has often been made of Occupy, of the Occupy throughout the country.
Well,
my point, I guess what I would say to that is that what they're doing is they're setting up a platform from which a number of people can protest a number of issues, one of them being the sleeping ban, one of them being, you know, the banks, another one being corruption in different places. You know, there's all kinds of issues that are being ignored by people in power that because the 1% prefers to ignore them or because they economically benefit the people who are at the top, and the rest of us, you know, the rest of us, yeah. Although, you know, frankly, are you there? Sorry?
Needs to be put out to the public a lot. Well,
so you think it needs to be a clearer message is what you're saying, huh? Okay. I think I lost you, but thanks for calling in. And the phone lines are open, 427-3772. Again, remind you, if you want to be counted on the issue of, I don't know how much they're going to pay any attention to you, but there's a meeting at City Hall of the commissions through which the Downtown Association is trying to fast-track its turn Pacific Avenue into a two-way thoroughfare. That's happening at 7 o'clock in about 8 minutes if you want to wander over to City Council chambers and look in on that. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org, finally on the air again. Again, I was listening to an interview from last Sunday that I did right after the General Assembly with a guy who was really upset with behavior by Officers Winston, Forbes, and Clark, by which we may think I mean Officer Clark and not Deputy Chief Clark, although I'm not quite sure, in which he claims that they were beating up a guy on the bridge, which, by the way, the story appeared in the Sentinel, and I've been trying to find it, but it's a little hard to find online. claimed that he had acted crazy, jumped out of a car, had, quote, smoked a cigarette that was laced with PCP, which sounded kind of strange when I heard it, because that kind of claim has not been made about, that I've heard, you know, since the 60s. I mean, it's the kind of thing that the, you know, that somebody might say if they want to justify, dismiss somebody's behavior as completely irrational, which may well have been. I don't know. It just sounded peculiar. And there were a number of people. It wasn't just this one guy whose interview you just heard and you'll hear a little more of, but several other people who were really upset with what happened on the bridge. In fact, so much so that they wanted to know why the General Assembly wasn't taking it up. And, of course, the General Assembly, of course, is not concerned so much with police abuse generally as it is with police abuse or police relations with Occupy Santa Cruz and how it treats the occupiers. Though I think in places like Oakland, there is a general concern about police abuse because some of the occupiers there are very much concerned with those issues, not just as it relates to Occupy Oakland. Let's hear some more of that interview from Sunday afternoon about the incident that happened on Sunday morning.
Any reports from people who were closer as to what the original complaint was that they were stopping?
Yes, I can find those people for and you can talk to them.
Would you? Let's go do that. We got Brandon Campbell. This is your report. How did you first notice this was happening? What drew your attention to it?
They just started surrounding him.
And you were waiting for a bus? You were?
No, I was standing right there in the grass.
You're pointing to an area near the bus stop. Happen on Sunday morning, you know. They try to get a couple of the guys to talk about it, even just you talking about it.
Oh, man, there's so many people that will talk about it. It's like unfair justice towards everybody, man. Like, I know somebody that got 8 months for camping. You know what? Even if you have a sleeping bag, they say you're camping. I got, like, 64 tickets last summer. I mean, that is unruling, dude.
How many tickets did you get last summer?
64, 68, for camping, open containers. Then I didn't have a tent. All I had was a sleeping bag. And even
where were you ticketed generally? In the same place?
All around Santa Cruz.
By the same officers or by different officers?
Pretty much by Clark, Winston, Forbes, the cops, the Rangers. I've even been just walking down the bike path right here on the levee, and they've stopped me and called me down and gave me tickets for walking by.
What do they say to you when they give you these tickets?
They say you're camping. Even if you got a backpack with a sleeping bag attached to it, they can get you for camping.
Last time you got a camping ticket was?
Last time we got a camping ticket was this summer, and about September 5th, I think it was.
So have they been laying off in the camping? You've been in jail.
Yes, I have.
You got out a week ago?
Yes, I did.
And have you been? You haven't been ticketed since?
No.
Mainly because you've been in a clean and sober house? Or?
Yes, sir.
Shit. Sorry to hear it, man.
Yeah, well, it's for the better. Because now the government's going to buy me a house.
That would be nice, wouldn't it? We've been talking with?
Brandon Campbell.
Thank you, Brandon. So you're recalling an incident that happened approximately when?
Between October 1st and October 7th.
And you say, where did this, what happened?
It was raining hard. We were at the old Borders underneath the marquee trying to stay dry. They gave us all tickets, 15 of us, for trespassing.
And name of some of the people who were ticketed?
I don't really know their names.
Shannon, Mrs. B?
Shannon, his girl.
Shannon, the man, not Shannon, the woman.
Yeah, yeah.
And who was the ticketer?
It was Clark, Winston, Forbes. Those are the three main people.
Day or night? When did this happen?
This was during the big rainstorm.
Was it during the evening or during the day?
It was during the day.
And what did they say to you as they ticketed you?
They said we're not allowed to stand there, and we were trespassing when we were trying to stay dry. We were not bothering nobody. We weren't drinking. We weren't smoking. We weren't doing nothing.
This is in the vacant, the Borders building, off the sidewalk or on the sidewalk next to
them? We were on the side, facing CVS.
On the side facing CVS, and you were, this wasn't the Borders building, it was... Because CVS is not... Parking garage?
No, it was on the side street of Borders, or right by Borders, the old building right there.
The building next, the border across the street from Borders?
No, the empty Borders building. It was the marquee right there.
Facing the New Leaf?
Yeah, facing New Leaf.
Right.
I guess we got around that one. I have on the line with me Linda Jolly from Jolly Old. Where are you from there, Linda?
Well, I'm in the area of Menlo Park in Redwood City, across the mountain. I don't get your signal, your radio signal over here.
Uh-huh.
But I have a couple of things to say.
Go ahead. Have you got an Occupy Menlo Park up there or not?
We had an Occupy in Redwood City last week, but I did not hear about it in time to participate. We need much better communication between the Occupy people, because I just don't hear about a lot of things. People are welcome to call me or email me or send it through you if you prefer. The information that I have tonight that I want to stress to everybody is that last week my friend Bruce and myself went to Congresswoman Jackie Spear's office, and we delivered a letter officially asking for a campground for homeless people. They owe us at least this much. And the point I want to stress is the government has been asked to do this now, and I asked the Congresswoman's office to let other people in Congress know that this request has been made.
Which Congresswoman?
Jackie Spear.
Uh-huh.
And my position now is that if the government refuses to give a legal place for homeless people to sleep, that there ought to be a revolution, okay? We ought to get real mean and nasty. Because the situation all along has been that the government took away the people's right to sleep somewhere. They took away the right to pitch a tent or sleep in a barn or sleep in a garage. And now we have these thousands or perhaps millions of people who are not legally allowed to camp or sleep anywhere, and they're being branded as criminals. I think I just heard your last caller say that a bunch of people were cited. And this is intolerable, and I think that the Occupy thing ought to be built into a revolution if our government will not at least give us the right to have a campground, and they have now been asked to provide a campground.
Yeah, I don't think the government's going to give you anything. I think you have to take it, and that's, I think, what the Occupies are trying to do.
Sure.
It is a kind of revolution, although, you know, how far a revolution goes depends on how much support they can get and how determined they are. You know, I would suggest to you that you get to one of the areas where there is a permanent occupation, like go down to San Jose, go up to, I don't know whether it's Palo Alto or San Francisco, and make some contacts with the folks, because there are a lot of homeless people up there who I'm sure agree with you too. And
yeah,
that's what you need. You need numbers. You can inform them of what's going on in the area where you're from, which is what, Menlo Park?
Yes. I would love to do that, but I have a means of making a living right now, and I don't want to give it up.
Right. Well, there you go.
When they take away your means of living and you have nothing, like they almost did to me, they almost took my truck, when they take away your means of life making a living, then I think you should go out and stop just short of killing people. You know? You should go out and get arrested, camp, demonstrate with your body, go to jail, and so forth.
So you're going to wait until your means get taken away before you do anything like that, huh?
Well, I would love to do everything, but I have to devote most of my time just to staying alive and keeping things that I do have.
I got you.
And I'm working toward a larger stream of income. I have secrets that predict stocks and futures, and I'm going to cash in, and I'm going to use the money to help things like this movement. But not everybody can go out and camp and demonstrate, but those who have lost everything ought to do that.
Yeah, well, I do always suggest you try to make contacts with local activists, even those, you know, who are fairly nearby, and
yeah,
that never seems to happen. And I know there's people like Tony Ciampi in Palo Alto, and there's Larry in Palo Alto, and there's there are other people too, who, you know, Vincent, what's his name in Palo Alto, who's been Victor Frost, I'm sorry.
Victor Frost. Yeah, I know
running,
about him.
Have you gone and met him and talked to him?
No, I haven't. It's just a question of how much time can I spend on this without going under.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I know.
But if they turn me into a criminal by taking away everything I have, and I will become vicious and bitter, like, you know.
Well, I mean, it'd be nice if you could do something before you became viciously bitter. You know, maybe you could try to email him. You know, send me an email, see if I can hook the two of you up. Who knows?
I'll try as hard as I can. I just want you and everybody who's listening to know that the government has been requested to give a campground. That's what they owe us, at least. And if it's not given to us, then they cannot blame us for starting a revolution.
Uh-huh. Well, they'll blame you anyway. Don't just mark my words.
Yeah.
Anyway, Linda, thanks for calling in. I hear what you're saying. I think it's true.
Yeah.
I just think you don't want to let the government dictate your actions either negatively or positively. You should, if it looks like, you know, the time is right and the wave is swelling, jump the wave while it's happening. Don't wait, you know, until it dies, and because it may not come again. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm trying to do everything I can do. And
sure. Of course you are.
You guys are doing a great job, and just keep on raising hell. Okay.
All right.
All right, I'll talk to you later.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Robert.
Bye-bye. And that was Linda Jolly up in Menlo Park. And here's some more from Brandon Campbell in Santa Cruz 4 days ago.
I think that's public property. There's no such thing as a loitering law or a trespass law for public property like that.
Well, they've got trespassing signs on everything, everywhere. And if you look like you're homeless or if you're a traveler, they just think you're out to cause trouble. You're doing drugs. You're a drug dealer. Just think you're out there doing up to no good. You're not allowed to walk down the street without them stopping you, searching in your premises. And it says 5, 6, and 7 and 21 in the Constitution, they are not legally right to search you, search your premises, search your persons, search your car for any reason, even if you are on probation.
That's interesting.
And some legal scholars would say, no, that's not accurate. On probation, you can do whatever you want. But then there are others who would say, no, the Constitution really should prohibit such a thing, and perhaps does. Or if it doesn't, the native and natural human rights of people puts that in a situation, puts us in a position where you have the right to resist those kinds of incursions, particularly if you have a probationary system that's set up for such a thing as, for example, the drug war, which is, of course, a huge fabrication and creates a huge criminalization of a vast number of people.
Well, thank you. Again, we've been talking with
Brandon Campbell.
So, man on the drums here, your name, sir?
Miguel De Leon.
Yeah, you're here at Occupy Santa Cruz, occupying Santa Cruz.
Yup. Same as 5 years ago, 6 years ago.
What do you make of the protest?
Oh, look at that car.
Huh? What do you think?
I think I'm glad it's finally getting on its way because, you know, shit's off the hook everywhere to everybody. Some old guy come along today, showed me some papers about how they're telling him he can't have his trailers on his property, you know, stuff like that.
He's got 13 acres.
And, you know, he built a wall, but, oh, they're going to jack him on that shit, too, because it's his property, but he can't build a wall. He can't have trailers on it. So how is that his property? I don't see how that's it, you know. What's up with that? It's been his property for a long time, but all of a sudden it's not anymore.
Yeah.
How long have you been with the camp?
Well, I've been there since since it started, but I was off to the side. I was 2 years early, 3 years, 4 years early, wasn't I? At the clock tower. Remember, we were occupying the clock tower. Remember that shit?
I've been around for quite a while.
Miguel De Leon, also known as Lido, is one of the two people who famously the city spent tens of thousands of dollars on to make it criminal for him to sleep in the downtown area, making it a jailing offense. They pushed for a civil injunction, and three police officers, Harms, Forbes, and that's what I think Brandon meant, Forbes, when he said Forbes, and Officer Winston repeatedly ticketed these folks downtown, trying to show that they were setting up a campsite when they were simply trying to rest or sleep with their materials during the day without having setting up anything with the intention of staying overnight. It was one of the phoniest cases I've ever seen, and a rare decision. Judge Volkman saw through that. However, he again extended this crazy injunction and turned it into a permanent injunction, so these two are banned. Miguel De Leon and Anna Richardson are banned from the downtown as far as any kind of sleeping goes. Everyone is, it's illegal for anyone to sleep downtown, any homeless person. But if they sleep downtown just once after 11 o'clock at night, they are subject to a jail. I don't know, because they snore so loud. You know, I mean, it's pretty abusive stuff. Anyway, here he is. First time I'd seen him at the protest. This I believe, was last Sunday or Monday.
I'm trying to remember what probably do, but...
We never left there. We were going corner to corner.
Yeah, we go.
Beat him and Anna up one night, and we had to leave.
And we're talking with...
I don't want to give out my name.
Anomalous.
Yeah. Dog. Dog Balls, yeah.
Hey, Dog Balls. So...
Freak Radio. I've been there.
And you have your guitar with you, Dog Balls.
I got my bass, I got my guitar, I got my drummer, Lito.
I with the paper.
We got some drums. We got the whole system now. Worked out.
Standing on the side of love, says the sign.
Here it is.
Anonymous in yourself.
Yeah, you're
tell you what, bring it anonymous in yourself.
Yeah, you want writer, support? You're just trying to get support for the first or the second or first, I think it is.
You're showing me a paper by the guy who's concerned about, I suppose, not entirely clear, but I wish him luck, I guess. I don't know. So are you under any you know, probation shit or anything of that sort?
I'm sure I'm on some sort of probation for a while.
And have you been hassled by police lately?
No, they've been all pretty cool. I think they miss me just as much as the rest of them.
So is the camp providing a protection for homeless folks?
Yeah, it's kind of giving us a spot where we can be without being hassled every day, which is real nice, man. We're actually starting to work, you know, figure out, you know, starting to get along a little bit because we're not so on edge from being harassed so much, you know what I'm saying? Might even get some arts done.
I remember you lost a lot of your artwork through the years through police intervention.
Yep.
Justice for all.
The biggest jackers of them all was the police and the city workers. None of the thieves stole from me. I can still leave my shit sitting out. The only ones I got to worry about is them.
Yep. The city. I caught the city looking through somebody's van one time, and I was in the van with the door open. And me and this girl were in there smoking a cigarette, talking. She was reading some books to me, some psychic thing. I was just letting her play along, you know. She was some psychic chick. So I'm sitting there, and this county truck pulls up, and this guy's sneaking around the front of the county truck from the passenger side of the light, and he's creeping. He's getting ready to go inside the van. He doesn't think anybody's in there, but I caught him all. What are you doing? And he was like, oh, well, we have to do this from time to time because there could be somebody dead in the vehicle. And he had his little story down pat, but I wasn't buying it. I knew what he was up to.
There you go. We've been talking with
Dog Balls
and
Miguel De Leon.
Thank you, Miguel. A.K.A. Ludo.
All right.
Dog Balls, go ahead.
I insist to everyone call into Robert North's show, and you don't have to give your name, but tell your story, man. Because, you know, there's too many people out there, and don't be scared of the police. You don't have to give your name. If you got beat up by the fucking cops, by the sheriffs, if you've ever suffered police brutality, like me, like a lot of people that are listening to this, please call in and let us know. And we don't care to know your name. You can remain anonymous. We need to hear it. Everybody needs to hear the truth.
Thank you, Doc Wells. Okay, we're talking with
Eric.
And Eric, this morning around what time you saw a police incident?
I'm not really sure at the time, but I would say like around 12 o'clock, 12:30.
And what, where were you?
I was by our camp, this next to the courthouse.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this incident happen where the cops surrounded this individual, and I walked up to see, making sure it was not a member of our camp.
How close did you get?
I was watching right where they were, like right across the street from them. So I was across the street.
Where were they?
They were in the corner of... almost by Bank of America, a little more on this side.
And this is the same incident that Brandon Campbell described, as I understood it. It happened last Sunday morning and involved the tasing of a person and then allegedly his being beaten by one or more of the police officers, of numerous police officers and cars that surrounded him on the Water Street Bridge.
They were on that side of the street, on the other side of the Water Street Bridge?
Yeah, they were on the other side.
How close did you get?
I was across in the right side of the Water Street Bridge, and they were on the other
side. You were on the other side of the Water Street Bridge?
Yeah.
And what did you see?
Well, the cops grabbed the individual and just
use full force to bend him over the bridge that there's there, this little cement wall. And when the guy was trying to force his way out, and the cop just started hitting him, and he got about...
How did he hit him with what?
With his fist. He punched him in his back and in his
hands.
It was 3 times that he punched him. And as soon as that happened, I pulled out my phone and tried to record it, but unfortunately the sun was aiming directly to my phone, and I wasn't able to get any video recording.
Do you know the name of the cop who was doing the punching?
No, I didn't. I stood on this side just for safety.
Were any other people on the other side closer to it?
From members of the Occupy movement or the camp, no. But there were civilians that were walking and stopped by and kind of got a better picture about what was going on.
How long did the whole thing take?
It was about 10 to 15 minutes, and it was just ridiculous. It was just one guy, and there was 3 patrol cars and firefighter truck. So it was just one person that...
A fire truck and 3 patrol cars?
Yeah.
And how many cops?
I saw 4 cops.
And what, did you hear anything, any dialogue at the scene?
No, I wasn't able to catch any dialogue. I know that the guy sounded like he was crying when he got punched. So that was the only basically thing I got.
How many, we don't know the guy's name, I take it.
No, unfortunately, I don't know.
Describe what he looked like. He's clean shaven, bearded.
Yeah, he was clean shaved. I'd say approximately mid-20s. He didn't have a shirt on. Just walking.
And did you see it? You only saw it after he was caught by the police or stopped by the police?
Yeah, the cops basically surrounded him. There was cops going to him through the front, and the individual started back walking the other way, and there was cops on the other side too, so they basically surrounded him.
Who else was a witness to this, do you know? Dennis and Eric aside.
Yeah, there's another couple of witnesses, Dennis and one of my other friends that's down at the camp. I can't remember his first name, but I know he goes by Magic, and he was also a witness. We both were.
Okay. Both from across the street.
Yeah, we were both together, yeah.
Fair enough. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, just police brutality has to stop. It's just not right, and they have no right to violate this norms and this basically this rights that we all have to not use physical force upon each other, at least not when it's not needed.
We've been talking with?
I'm sorry?
Your name again?
Oh, Eric.
Thanks, Eric.
And the story, which I finally found here in the Sentinel, which is from yesterday's Sentinel, is from byline by Kathy Kelly. It reads, a 41-year-old man believed to be under the influence of PCP was stunned with a taser on the Water Street Bridge Sunday afternoon after he bit an officer's arm, police said. Police got a call just after noon about a man who had jumped out of his mother's vehicle near Highway 1 and Highway 9 and was believed to have smoked marijuana laced with PCP, Lieutenant Bernie Escalante said. The man fled on a bike, and police caught up with him on the bridge, Escalante said. Cyrus Bench, the name of the man, Cyrus Bench, became combative and bit an officer's arm, Escalante said. Bench, 41, was taken to Dominican Hospital for treatment, and he became combative once again, he said. Bench allegedly battered a nurse and hurled a container of his urine at someone, Escalante said. So he was dealt with once again in an appropriate professional manner, he said, adding that the taser had worked appropriately and Bench was treated. Not sure whether it's Bench or Bench. In one case, Kathy Kelly writes B-E-N-C-K, and another she writes B-E-N-C-H. And taken to jail. The officer was treated and is okay, he added. Bench was booked on suspicion of disorderly conduct, being under the influence, battery on a police officer, battery on emergency medical personnel, and resisting arrest, he said. And so for those who believe police accounts, that's the story from the Sentinel. I'm not saying it isn't true. It is, however, the police account. So you can choose what you want to believe or actually research further if you have the time and energy. Continuing with some street interviews from last couple days.
You're welcome.
me, that the camp is regarding me as some kind of a saint, although...
Oh, dear, this is me reflecting on some issues. It's all very well, but you can save those reflections perhaps for another time. Let's see here. Here are some earlier interviews, which, again, are from Occupy Santa Cruz. No, I would have to pause briefly to slow that one down.
Pico. There's also in a Federal Diamond in Boulder Creek going down, and one in Dalton.
What are these for?
Basically, your normal craziness. Personally, I would say that leave them all alone.
What's the charge?
You know, it's just drugs and...
Drugs?
Yeah.
You mean pharmaceuticals? The main killer drug? Or alcohol, perhaps? Probably
drugs,
not. Okay. So, that was a brief interview on the street here at Maple and Pacific. So I'm talking to Ben here at the Occupy Santa Cruz protest at about 4:40, talking with...
Casey, living good.
He was about to eat a scone, which he's brought in a box, along with produce, bagels, brownies. Where'd you get all this secondhand, day-old food?
I got them from Food Bin and New Leaf on the west side. Yeah. I don't want to get these people in trouble, but they're not liable for being fired through the Good Samaritan law. And so...
So, have you? Are you? In fact, you're operating with a new Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz, or a reactivated Food Not Bomb?
Yeah, the Chavez Club kind of broke up, but went to a new house, the Max House on Ocean, and it's we're still trying to build some numbers, but yeah, we've been providing a meal every Friday for a while, so.
And I guess it's this Friday. So, but of course, people are getting food here not just on Fridays, but quite frequently, like several times a day. Right?
Yeah. Essentially.
Keith McHenry here. He'll be talking about organizing a round-the-clock soup kitchen. Why aren't you Keith McHenry?
I am just not as devoted as Keith McHenry. I don't think anyone can be.
Co-founder of Food Not Bomb.
Yeah, so.
In case people don't kind of catch some of the underlying reality here, Casey Living Good is an activist who was inspired by Keith McHenry, co-founder of Food Not Bombs, and the resistance of the Orlando, Florida Food Not Bombs to the attempt to stop its feeding homeless people food that is actually... still an issue in Orlando, Florida, to restart Food Not Bombs in Santa Cruz. And he's now an active in that movement, as well as an active person of Occupy Santa Cruz, as well as a HUF activist.
Keith McHenry actually agreed to, as he does his tour, he agreed to come to Santa Cruz and give a speech or lecture or whatever at UCSC. So...
How about down here at the courthouse? Who gives a shit about UCSC?
If it lasts till May or March, then maybe.
I see. So I see we have a drummer drumming Take Back Our Future. I notice the signs have all been removed from the courthouse steps. I see Noah's doing some sweeping of the steps. There's actually one or two signs up there. There are signs along some of the sides of the, but there are far less signs, and at least they seem to be far less signs than in the past. Are they the same number, or are they just have signs been removed for one reason or another?
Some signs get damaged by the dew or moisture from the air throughout the night.
It's been a hot day, and I'm talking about between now and, let's say, 4 hours ago when I saw signs all over this area. They've all been moved. Have you been stealing signs, Casey?
I think we have the same amount of signs, honestly. Like there. We moved it up the steps in preparation for the General Assembly. And
I see. So there is a General Assembly coming up at 6.
Yeah, which is, an hour and a half. So plus they wanted to clean. So.
Now, is this going to be another process-orama talkathon doo-doo, this General Assembly?
No, every assembly is different.
Well, give me an example of the thrill-packed adventures of the last General Assembly yesterday. Or were you there?
I was there. I just took a kind of a back seat because I felt like I've been involved in the General Assemblies a lot more than others, and I just wanted to take a step back. However, the last assembly kind of got, I'm trying to remember what we consensed on. Not much, I don't know.
Well, I went to the Occupy Santa Cruz website. I know there's a big announcement of a large protest tomorrow at noon in solidarity across the country. I understand also from hearing of CNN News tonight that dozens of activists have been arrested in Seattle, Denver, some in New York, San Diego are the cities I heard mentioned. And I know you yourself are probably the only person here who has gotten a ticket in the last few months, other than perhaps it might be a few homeless folks have gotten tickets. You got a ticket for sleeping in front of the Santa Cruz City Hall on, I think it was June 1st or June 2nd?
It was the 2nd, I believe.
You received in the mail your come-to-court announcement?
I actually didn't. I was moving around a lot, and so...
Avoiding service, KCL?
Perhaps, you know, I already owe them, like, over $3,000 or $4,000 or whatever it amounted to.
Oh, you do? Would you like to confess here on air of your evading this and that?
Yeah.
I would advise against it as your non-attorney attorney.
It's whatever. It's already brought up to the collection agency. There's no warrant out for my arrest, and so if they want to take whatever money I have, feel free. I'll be able to get free food here at the occupation. So
you heard it, feds. Come and get them. So what's happening here? There's a new kind of encampment situation down the way. Have you been to the nighttime camp where people are sleeping? Because if they sleep here, it's so-called lodging. Strange how sleeping turns into lodging when you're in a public area and the people can see you.
This is actually sounds like an earlier tape. One of the first days after October 7th when the camp actually, the Occupy Santa Cruz moved to the, first it moved over to Mission Plaza, then it moved back to the courthouse and has stayed there ever since. And then after a few days it moved, or a day or two, maybe a few days, it moved from San Lorenzo Park near the lawn bowling area down onto the San Lorenzo benchlands, where it now resides. And the number of tents there is now dropping. According to Dreamcatcher, who I did interview today before the show, but I looks like I'm not going to be able to find his interview. It may have been on that. I think it was on the tape that got broken. My apologies to you, Dreamcatcher, if you're huddling near a radio waiting to hear yourself. Dreamcatcher was featured as well as Dread Eye and some other folks from the Occupy Santa Cruz camp, of which there were at least 100 tents a couple days ago. Now it's down to 70. Dreamcatcher explained that there are a number of folks had left under the kind of the reality that police had threatened they'd be coming back. And police have set up Parks and Rec has set up a sort of a fence line. It isn't really a fence, but it is a sort of a, I'm not sure if it's a tow line or a tape line across San Lorenzo benchland, starting where the stairway comes down near the lawn bowling area from the upper walkway where the courts are down onto the lower benchland area where many of the tents, where all the tents are actually, that are involved with this protest. Again, my apologies to you, Dreamcatcher, for not catching you in describing your dreams. But I do have an interesting conversation that I recorded. It was probably last Saturday from Free Radio broadcaster Coral Brun and Housing Now in Santa Cruz activist Linda LeMaster, both of whom, full disclosure, are occasional HUF attendees, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Boy, I'm just bursting with organizational names today. And I thought it was a very interesting conversation. I'm going to play some of that now.
Yeah.
shelter, more people forming community. I mean, that is really the richness of this. And the protest is good, too, but the richness is the community that's happening.
So I'm up here and having a breakfast with Coral Brun, who was at the General Assembly last night. And Coral here is... last night was, of course, the night... it is now October 29th. It was Friday night, October 28th. There was some problems at the General Assembly and some accomplishments?
Yeah, there's usually both. And last night there was... some people wanted to talk about the food issue longer than other people, and they wanted to force them to talk about it in small groups. But then Elise from Berkeley was there, and she was saying, no, we want to talk about it now. And then Patrick...
Who from Berkeley was there?
I think Elise, a worker who's been around Santa Cruz, who, I mean, she uses another name, but she's been interviewed by you and by...
Sylvie, maybe, or... Is she kind of a... dare I say, wing-nutty kind of person? Forgive me for putting it in that way.
She's a social worker type.
Social worker, that's even worse, perhaps.
The food issue, what is the food issue?
Well, there are those who think that the people at the camp are hoarding food and that they aren't working for it. So there's a kind of a categorization like corporations do, where they put you in like, oh, well, you haven't worked, you don't get any food.
Those who shall not work, they'll not eat.
And there was people who defended everybody should eat, which we just need to get more food. So then the argument that, oh, we throw away so much food, it's pathetic. And then this guy wouldn't let me, so it's kind of like some people feel like they deserve food more than others. That's what it gets down to, poo-poo and food. So basics that need to be discussed in these kind of things before we can get more advanced technologically and spiritually. I think it's down to the issue of food and where do we pee and poop.
Interesting. The shelter issue seems to have been dealt with, because I saw 75 tents there last night, which was quite a number of tents, although 25 of them were beyond the stairway in the San Lorenzo benchlands, and perhaps not officially part of the camp, or not according to Deputy Chief Clark's secret dictum about, you know, oh, it's legal according to me to do it here, but it's not legal there, or I will tolerate this, but I won't tolerate that. He has a series of claims he makes, apparently, according to the sub rosa comments from people like Steve Plage, or possibly, I don't know who that comes from, but anyway, so you, at the General Assembly last night, there was this discussion of the food issue. I understand that came up kind of early on the agenda after the committee reports.
Yes.
And what then happened? Were there any decisions made? Did people break up into small groups?
Now, the reason I'm going into such detail is because the Friday night assembly a week ago had everybody upset, or a number of people upset when I arrived, and upset with... Patrick, who's I'll call him a wild and crazy activist and a drummer, who I've known for 15 years, who is, can be violent at different points, and he also can be very outspoken in his point of view. I'm trying to find my words properly, because if you've had a tiff with someone, you're, at least I'm prone to be hypersensitive about that person. But he's also been, you know, he's been a worker at the camp in his own way. He often proposes more radical or extreme solutions to things than I'm ready for, but that, you know, may well be appropriate in some respects. There was a lot of anger at the objections he made to, or the fact that they felt he was disrupting the meeting by his verbal objections, tried to get him to leave. He threatened people and told them to keep their distance. If that was a threat, I'm not quite sure. I wasn't there for any of that. I got secondhand accounts. And what I heard from Coral and then from Linda LeMaster was a different account of what had happened. And I think it's not, you know, I'm not attempting to badmouth or goodmouth Patrick or anybody else at the Occupy Santa Cruz. I'm trying to kind of pass on a portion of the dialogue or the process that goes on, the the journey people make, the struggle that goes on to come to understanding on some of these issues, the problems that arise. And that's really what I'm trying to get sort of my head around and my hands around.
Inevitably, it turned it into people breaking themselves up into little discussion groups, like a huge cocktail party, but it was outdoors.
Okay. Now, was this something that done in the process, or was it extra procedural?
I don't know if they were aware of it. There was, I think it's just a social reality to break up and just talk about these things with like-minded people, and quietly. But then there were people that were still furious with certain ones they wanted to remove from the entire place.
Now let me ask about this. And was the claim that I heard when I arrived 2 hours after the assembly had finished, which I played, I didn't really play it because I didn't record most of it, but some of it came out in the subsequent conversations I had, was that Patrick and I guess Sylvie, whoever her name is.
It wasn't Sylvie. It was a woman named Elise, who's a... I met her a year ago. She's an activist from Berkeley, and I wasn't present for the instance that happened last Friday. Just wanted to correct that name situation, since on several broadcasts I've given the wrong name for that person.
Elise. I think it was... We're being outrageously... Patrick was being violently angry and abusive and threatening people, and whereas... because he felt that people were stealing the money from the front table and that there was this demand for... I'm not quite sure what his motivation was. He did talk to me about it briefly, but I didn't record him at the time, partially because I was sort of swept up in the ostracized Patrick mentality, which was sort of a, you know, or beware the evil Patrick. I mean, Patrick has been violent toward me in the past, and he does express a lot of, he's hit me. I mean, he shoved me, he's grabbed my tape recorder and thrown it away, he's attacked me. And he's, you know, he expresses himself in that kind of direct action. Did that happen last night?
Let me clarify. That happened on one occasion, and I've kind of been scarred by it. So I am influenced in my reflections by that. Although I've spoken to Patrick since, and we've had civil conversations, and we've had discussions. But I obviously remember... perhaps as a middle-class person who's not used to physical confrontations, that interaction that I had with him. But as you will hear in this tape, assuming we get to the end of it, the issue apparently was not about Patrick at all. It was about a proposal brought up that was involved cutting people off the food accessibility, and that was something that upset a number of people, and Patrick was only one of them. And the way it was dealt with by the General Assembly facilitators apparently was such as to really upset Patrick to the extent that he became, at least if I understand what happened correctly, disruptive. And I'm a person who often has been accused of being disruptive in city council meetings when I've not been. I mean, I've been critical, I've been dissident. But I've never been convicted of disrupting a city council meeting. I don't believe in disrupting meetings. I believe in making commentary in meetings. I believe in trying to be heard in meetings, but not in stopping the process. Perhaps I should be, because sometimes stopping the process, as Occupy Santa Cruz is trying to do with the process of Wall Street and other businesses' usual procedures in Santa Cruz, is really... an essential part of what needs to be done. However, this is an example of an internal situation where somebody stops the process of the General Assembly, although I think, you know, the process really continues in its own way, that you may not have this formalistic General Assembly committees reporting, consensus, everybody on the stack, yada, yada, yada. Not that necessarily is a bad process, but still things happen and develop through the process of people talking with each other, whether in small groups or in large groups. So I think that's what's happening with Occupy Santa Cruz. And it doesn't have to be forced into a mold of one sort or another. The mold should be, the form should not be a mold. It should be something that facilitates the spirit of the meeting. And that is always something that can be changing. And that's a kind of a Heraclitean dilemma, if you want to get Greek about it.
I didn't see him shove anyone. I heard him louder than everybody else, him and Elise. But she had a lot of good points. He had a lot of good points. Just that, why are we at this volume when nobody's really listening to what's being said? It's just like, shut up, shut up.
So there was more concern about the volume, and they were ignoring the substance of the comments by these two speakers?
We weren't ignoring it. Some people wanted to continue it, and some people said, you're not letting us continue it. It was just being...
Who was not letting the discussion go on?
There were the facilitators.
So they were trying to over-control the meeting? Is that what you're suggesting?
And that's what I think the whole thing was about, yeah. I'm not sure if I agree with that or I disagree with it, but that's what was happening.
It was interesting. Nobody brought up the issue of over-controlling at all. When I arrived, it was all about Patrick's violence and why can't we exclude him and he won't leave and he's still here. And I noticed there was this obsession with Patrick 2 hours later, which I seem to share because I keep bringing up the issue in this discussion. But my later reflections on it this morning were that, you know, this is a process that has to be worked through, that it's one issue among many, that it's, you know, you want to recognize that there's a sort of a class division here, particularly a control division. People who are at the center of the process think they've got it all down in terms of something they want to either, they think they are entitled to impose on the group because they've gotten, quote, consensus from the group to impose it. This, to me, is really one of the main issues. It isn't really being discussed, the whole issue of control. It is being discussed, Linda says. We also have Linda LeMaster here, Housing Now in Santa Cruz representative. Linda perhaps wanted to say something, but since you're a little bit further away from me at the moment, perhaps I'll give the tape recorder to Coral, and she can give it to Linda.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to...
You have to be close, be fairly close to your mouth. I was licking the paper for you.
Thank you, Robert. I just wanted to say that what I'm hearing and seeing is that both when people get together down there, casually and in the larger group, and online on the websites and the Facebook pages of Occupy Santa Cruz, they're talking about it. And this guy, Justin, I forget his last name. People are talking about those people, I would add those men, but I don't want to speak for everyone, just myself that way, who seem to step into the listening space and want to have all the ideas and take direction and tell people what they can and can't do. And even when they're correct, half the people there don't feel they need to be treated that way. And more important, if this is a consensus, it's presumptuous for these particular personalities of men to fill that space because it stops everyone else from sharing what they would share.
Mm-hmm.
Carl, you're saying yes?
Yeah, that's the way they were looking at it, too, last night as well.
So instead of it, perhaps your perception is it wasn't that Patrick and Elise or Sylvie, whoever it is, broke up the meeting. It was at the meetings. The natural response was to break up into small groups to discuss the issue. Did the issue actually get discussed as far as you could hear? Was there new ground broken, do you think? Did people spend their time saying, as I found when I arrived, let's get rid of Patrick. Why can't we get rid of Patrick? There'll be a family day tomorrow. How can this happen? Everyone will see how violent it is. It's horrible. We don't know what to do.
People from Guerrilla Theater were saying that when I left.
Wes Mode's crew.
And his partner, yeah.
Aside from...
The Guerrilla Theater is, of course, a group I support, which is a group that has been playing free movies on Friday nights at different points. In the past few years, it was in spaces that had been... where it had been illegal to be at night, and the Guerrilla Theater helped to open up those spaces by restoring... not by any process of seeking permission, but by simply reasserting the right of the community to the commons. But more recently, they've only shown movies in legal venues, which I found less than I would have hoped. But, you know, it's nice that they're showing free movies. I think they were planning to show Fly versus Fly, the the old Vincent Price, The Fly movie, and the 1980s Fly movie with Jeff Goldblum. But it didn't get shown because of the ruckus that was going on, or because they decided not to, because they didn't like what went down. I wasn't sure. I never actually talked to Wes and the other folks there about that. That's a little perhaps unnecessary background. I hope this isn't boring folks who don't know what the hell I'm talking about or couldn't care less. This is Free Radio. My name is Robert Norse, and the name of the show is Bathrop Spears Broadsides, talking about issues that concern homeless and poor people, which the Occupy Santa Cruz encampment definitely does. I encourage people, if they want to see my latest thoughts on the police threats to evict the campground or to remove it and to presumably arrest those who won't go and destroy their property or confiscate their property, although, I don't know, maybe they'll just come in and scold them to death as one approach. It hasn't been used by the police, as far as I know, generally speaking. These are conversations about the internal processes of Occupy Santa Cruz, which has a general assembly every night and at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoons, in which people discuss what to do next. And it may be that this whole business of the internal makeup of the camp and the internal issues is really only of interest to those of us who actually are really kind of strongly focused on this group. But it is an important movement, I think, for sure. And that's, of course, I think, agreed to by large numbers of folks across the country. That doesn't mean it's necessarily true, of course. But I think it's true in Santa Cruz because it provides a platform for different activists pursuing and illuminating different areas of the abuses of authorities and attempts to combat those abuses, from which to both promulgate their message, get support, go out and do colorful actions, and empower other people to stand up and assert their rights as well. This is what I've been trying to get people to do for decades, and naturally I'm pleased when I see it beginning to happen at Occupy Santa Cruz. So I find it also interesting because, in a way, a kind of community is created, both positive in that homeless people who were previously being attacked singly by police for such crimes as sleeping, covering up with blankets, and setting up a tent against the rain, now get the implicit protection of each other. Not because they wouldn't necessarily disperse if the police told them to, but because there has been a determination that this is not just a mere survival issue for poor people, which we middle-class people don't give a shit about, but it's also a political issue of the rights of everyone to assemble in public places, which middle-class people do care about because they're finding that the normal means of political protest ain't working at all. And therefore, they have to assemble together for new dialogue and action. That it's become clear that legislators, boards of directors of corporations, governors, presidents won't undertake. And this is a new spirit in the land. In a way, it's an old spirit, but it's an old spirit we haven't seen too much of. Let's hear some more of this discussion. Perhaps I'm just indulging myself, and if anybody has new reports, I just gave a call to Linda LeMaster, who's speaking on the tape, and she's actually at the General Assembly now. I don't know if it's raining outside or not. There was some concern that the rain would drive away Occupy Santa Cruz. At least I had some concern. But I was reassured, or I was assured by various camp members that they had prepared for it, they were ready to deal with it. And also, it doesn't look like, at least as of when I went into the studio, the rain was slight. As for the question of the police, I put out a flyer in which I encourage people to, whatever they decide to do, if they're going to stand firm or leave, but not to abandon the Occupy Santa Cruz, but to return if the police disperse one campground to come back twice as strong with a second one.
Yeah, but anybody else? Was there any positive discussion of the issues of food? Did the issue of the thou shalt not work, thou shalt not work?
That was brought up. I felt that everybody has a right to eat. We don't want to become like corporations. where you have to divide everything up into haves and have-nots. Well, that's what was said by Ed Fry, haves and have-nots.
Ed Fry said, Ed Fry, normally a strong white male voice who is often at the center of these things, perhaps a target of Linda's criticism in that respect.
Yeah, I don't know, I guess.
What did he say? He said he favored no imposition of work rules or an imposition of work.
I don't remember about what he thought about work. They all recognized that the homeless had donated their campground, that some people would like to be included in things, and maybe if they keep eating, get enough strength, and they'll be able to work more. So there was this back and forth. Are people just trying to take everything, or will they give if they have enough in order to feel good enough to work? There's someone who brought up the three.
They're not slaving hard enough for us, the house, to come down every so often to hang out and do some work and want to control and lead the situation.
Yeah, they're either willing and unable, willing and able, or some are able and not willing. You know, three types of people.
But the point being that the people who are making those kinds of distinctions and decisions are not the people who are under threat every night from arrest by police, who have been actually forced by Wall Street and similar conditions into the situation they're in. Linda, you're shaking your head. Hang on. Linda has a comment.
Robert Norse, I feel that there are people in the camp that have the same divide. It's just, you know, kind of like, I felt like it was like half and half in the camp. I've seen people trying to put demands on other people. I couldn't tell what authority they were coming from. Guy trying to soak his feet is saying, being told, why aren't you washing dishes? As if it wasn't obvious. You know? One time when I was down there in the late afternoon. But the people that aren't at the camps seem, even though they're not down there, to be more concerned about the kind of scarcity outlook that leads to these kind of concerns. And I don't think any kind of marshalling is going to work, but there is consensus management.
Thank you, Linda. So, Cora, how long did you stay for the meeting?
Until about 8:15.
Started at 6?
Yeah.
What was the situation when you left?
Hold on. Do you have a situation when I left? I had been talking to this fellow named Daryl, and
Is this the famous Daryl of Let's Make a Non-Profit Fund and Resolve?
Because it occurred to me that, that's the Daryl I met earlier last year, but he didn't seem the same, and he said he had been in New Mexico living and came back.
Yeah, I didn't think much of his ideas, and felt he rented the hall in a room at Loudon Nelson, and was trying to convince everybody to help start a 501c3 and that sort of thing. I don't know if it's the same guy, but anyway, the reality though was, you seem to say that there was a positive outcome to the meeting last night.
I didn't ask other people's opinions. I know that there's a vendetta against one person.
Patrick?
As far as I know, it's just him, yeah.
And is that in any way justified by his behavior? Do you think it is? It covers up the fact that he's making legitimate objections to a process that is exclusionary?
I suppose his behavior has made them want to have an exclusionary clause. I think it's give and take a little bit of both, but he brings up some good points. It's just that it puts people off because they don't want to be involved that well. They just want more control. Maybe he wants control. So it's kind of a battle between how do I get more attention. It's not going to be easy and clean and neat. Democracy is the way it looks, just everybody hashing it out that way.
We have been talking with the famed broadcaster on Tuesday nights from, 6 to 9, or is it 7 to 10?
6 to 9.
And that name that you are, in fact.
Identify
yourself for our mini list.
Eating breakfast.
Okay. Eating E.D. I didn't realize your name was breakfast.
And that's the sound of a tape recorder failing. It's too bad because the... There was a subsequent conversation that was quite interesting. But perhaps interesting only to me. I may be getting too lost in Occupy Santa Cruz, which I'm probably going to be occupied with when I leave the studio to see what's cooking over there with the General Assembly and the concerns about police activity as in Oakland when they and other cities where occupiers are being attacked. But I think really the key, one of the issues to think about here is not that, but rather what kind of positive steps Occupy activists need to do next, what targets they need to focus on to expose and organize people who are waiting to be organized. We have a caller. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Robert.
Hey, scope it out, Scott.
So anyway, I don't know if you already know this or not, that the two-way street deal on Pacific Avenue has been squashed.
Oh, no. How can that be?
The fire department said that they wouldn't be able to get their fire trucks down the street if there's two-way traffic unless they took out parking on one side of the street.
And that, of course, would upset Cynthia Matthews, who wants all those parking meters in there.
Well, it was, yeah, the Downtown Association would oppose it if there was a loss of any parking. So
isn't it strange that the Downtown Association didn't check this out before they started coming on gung-ho to the city council, or was this a necessary...
Well, yeah, this was like, I guess, something they did early this morning was that the public, because you know, they were going to have this meeting tonight. It was going to be the Downtown Association, Public Works, and...
Regional Transportation Commission?
Or somebody. They were all going to meet together as a... you know, to fast-track this whole process.
Yeah, I've been announcing it.
But before this was going to happen, this morning they wanted the fire department to come in and say, yeah, this is, you know, going to work. And so they did a test early this morning, and the fire they determined that, you know, if there's another vehicle, the fire trucks wouldn't be able to maneuver.
You know, that's kind of along the lines of what one of the speakers was saying, a guy called Mark, a city planner, who pointed out that just the setbacks were just not sufficiently set back, so to speak.
Well, I think it would have been hard to, you know, with given the width of the street, if you had parking on both sides, it would have been hard to maneuver with, you know, if two rather large vehicles.
Let me clarify for our listeners. We're talking about a proposal to turn Pacific Avenue into a two-way street as it was back in the 50s, right?
Well, it was a two-way street up until the late 60s when the Pacific Garden Mall was established.
Right. But its heyday, I always thought, was in the 50s, but maybe not.
Well, yeah, there's...
I mean, it's kind of like a return to the 50s is what the merchants are looking for.
Well, I mean, the merchants are constantly complaining that, you know, the hippies downtown or whatever you want to call the people nowadays, I guess they're not hippies anymore, are, you know, the street people, the homeless people, the bums, whatever you want to call them, are destroying their businesses. And, you know, that was the same excuse that... when Albertsons was downtown, it was why they left. They said that, you know, because of the conditions in downtown, meaning the undesirable elements, that they were unable to sell enough groceries to have a viable business there. Then when Zanotto's came in, they said pretty much the same thing. Then Trader Joe's comes in. The place is so damn busy, you can't even get a parking spot in their parking lot. So, for some reason, given all this undesirable element, Trader Joe's is able to, like, do a booming business, even so much as that they stay open an hour longer than any other Trader Joe's in the area.
Could this be a conspiracy to discredit the Downtown Association? Now, Scott, are you...
You know, and the other thing is that most of these businesses downtown are just trinket shops. They're tourist traps. You know, and people that actually live here in Santa Cruz don't want to buy that crap. And it's just, you know, and then most of them close at 6. If you want people with money to buy your stuff, you got to be open when they're... out and able to shop. if they actually work, because that's how they earn money, they can't shop during the day. And if you close at 6 o'clock, they're not going to be able to shop at your place except for limited hours on Saturdays and Sundays. So
Scott, was the meeting canceled then tonight?
I stopped because I read about it in the Sentinel online version that it had the fire department to put the kibosh on the whole thing.
Uh-huh.
But I decided I better stop by because you can't trust the Sentinel.
Oh, come.
And there was a few people milling around outside, and I guess People Power had finally decided to make a stand on the whole thing, because of the earlier city council meeting, they sent one of their representatives in and said, oh, we have no position on this, which is...
I remember. Unfortunately, we're out of time. Scott, thanks for the update. Any final word?
Occupy.
Hey, thank you, Scott.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. And that is it for Bathrop Spears Broadsides tonight. Instead, we have occupying the studio, the infamous and much-beloved Uncle Dennis.
What's the filling in an occupy?
The who?
The filling in an occupy.
It's a pun of some sort, I think. But I will leave it to Uncle Dennis to explicate his perspective, as he will no doubt do one way or another. I'll be back on Sunday, unless I get a better offer, at 9:30 in the morning. That's right, 9:30 it is. And the show is being archived at huffsantacruz.org in case you can endure it a second time. I certainly couldn't, but there may be some who have more tenacity than I do. In the meantime, do keep your radios on. 101.1 FM will broadcast updates if people are in the studio, if there is breaking news for Occupy Santa Cruz, which may be under police attack in the next few days. If not sooner. Thank you, Uncle Dennis. And what's coming up from the cream to the dregs?
Well, we get some live Pink Floyd.
Oh, okay. Live? You got them in the studio? I haven't noticed them in...
Live on CD. A live performance by Pink Floyd.
I see. Live but dead, so to speak.
Well, no. They're still there.
Oh, okay. Well, cool. Thank you.